Hello again. It's the morning after I have seen Henry V, directed by David Rowan, for the second time this year. I'm going to try and just give my review without notes this time, because it seemed to get a bit stuck the last time and a little bit messy. But this is all a new thing to me, this audio review. I will type up the review when time allows. But here goes. Oh, and by the way, today's my birthday, so happy birthday to me. Yes, I'm years old today. Yes, I know it's amazing, but I was in fact born in 19... There we go. So, Henry V, what can one say about it? Well, last night was absolutely spectacular. I saw it, first of all, on August the 6th, Saturday night, and I enjoyed it. It was, in fact, I thought it was very fine. But last night was considerably better. It was one of my best nights of the year, actually, and it's been a really remarkably consistent year of good performances. Malcolm Davis kicks the whole thing off, which surprised me very much the first time. I like this, I have to say, rather than I hope no directors take umbrage at this. I quite like this, some of the actors, you know, opening up the performances. Gareth Llewellyn does at The Winter's Tale. The only problem for me, in some cases, if they stay in character, they can't promote my book, but bless him, Malcolm Davis did, and was very funny, actually, in the intro. I have to say, actually, thinking of Malcolm Davis, that thank God I'd seen a photo of the Bishop of Ely on Facebook before I first went, or I think I'd have wet myself. It was just ridiculous. Anyway, that does remind me how much people change, actually, during this particular performance with the doubling. It's doubling, tripling, quadrupling, or I think even quintupling in Tessa Hart's case. The characters are quite brilliant at this. All of you, if I don't mention you in this review, I'm really sorry. You were all brilliant. Let's get that out of the way right away. You were all brilliant. But really, the doubling, tripling, quadrupling, etc., it was extraordinary how different you were. If it wasn't for the programme, I wouldn't actually have realised at times. Emily Slaughter is just incredibly different as both Nim and Catherine. Really, you'd think it was two different people, so kudos to that. Kay Dent, Dauphin Williams was another pairing that really took the eye. Both such different characters, and both so very different from her wonderful Miranda from The Tempest in the first half of the CSF season. I guess the most spectacular one, though, and I don't think anybody will be surprised at me saying this, the most spectacular doubling, in a way, is Angus Villiers-Stewart's, who... His move from being a bishop, which was actually quite funny, I thought, in and of itself, but his move from being that, the Bishop of Canterbury, to being Bourbon, is completely over the top, and if I describe it, you'd think it was stupid. But of course, you have to go and see it. He's absolutely brilliant as the macho French, going to kill all English, obviously, you know, something right up my street. No, forget that. Just the way he plays with the audience, the way he points his fingers, the way he sort of spits at the English flag. When I say the English flag, I should point out that there's a blue tape down the middle of the audience, and it splits the audience, it's the English channel, and it splits the audience into the English and French side, and both sides have a banner, and the lucky person in the audience gets to hold it. I was lucky enough last night to be sitting beside the lady who brilliantly held on to her French flag and until Henry V, Joseph Tregear, and I've just realised I may be pronouncing your name incorrectly, so apologies, I've never heard it. Joseph Tregear snatched it out of her hand. She didn't blink. I think I nearly jumped out of my seat. Well, if you can imagine the grass being a seat, I nearly jumped out my grass seat at the force with which he took it. But she didn't blink at all. So that's another good touch involving the audience, as we so often do. I mentioned that there was lots of doubling and tripling and so forth, and of course it takes me on to talking about Tessa, because she did at least five parts. Everybody who did the doubling, tripling was excellent, as I've said before. But Tessa doing five was particularly good, and since everybody probably always thinks, I always say Tessa's marvellous, just because she always is, I can actually be judgmental as well, and I can pick my favourite of her five characters, and it comes right at the beginning. It's when she does the chorus. Interestingly, that she did a brilliant chorus and quite an elaborately rewritten to be more integral chorus in Pericles in Simon Bell's 2014, I think it was, Pericles. She was a wonderful chorus then, and she was a wonderful chorus again today. So of the five parts she played, my favourite was the first one, which obviously she recurs throughout the play. But her facial expressions when she was doing the program, the prologue, plus her bodily movements and hand gestures were just fantastic. The way she, you know, the way she enacted the hourglass with her hands, stuff like that, just great. That was my favourite part, and the chorus is so important in this play. And it's a little bit of an odd play, really, in many ways. If you think about it, if you knew the story of the Battle of Agincourt and Henry V, you would expect the battle to be at the end, and not him playing the sort of shy lover, which was excellently done, by the way. Really, really good. But at both nights, it was fantastic, just as it should be. The whole French courts thing was well done, actually. The romance stuff. Absolutely excellent. The French princess, her nurse attendant, and then Henry V when he interacted with them, just marvelous. I've gone completely off track again. This seems to be what happens when you do these audio things. I will try and improve, I promise. So to go back to the beginning again, I was just saying that at the beginning, Tessa, Malcolm Davis got us off to start, and then Tessa with a wonderful prologue. But I'm now going to say something, and if I was writing this, I'd probably have to insert some kind of gif that showed me blushing. I'm now going to talk about the scene, the scenic setup, and the music. Having written an entire book about Shakespeare at the festival being on the bare stage, I'm now going to talk about how good the scenic effects were. There you go. That's just, I can get off with it. What I wanted to talk about was the Tiring House, which was absolutely fantastic under the tree with the big flag creating an entrance to a tent-like effect. But what was wonderful was you kept seeing the actors who were not on stage watching those who were, or changing their clothes, or strumming inaudibly at the music they were to come on and later play, or just hanging up clothes. It was a marvellous backdrop. And it sounds like it would distract you from watching the main action, but it didn't. It all seamlessly fitted in. I'd love to know how long that took to work out. It just was great, and it made the whole idea of us all being one together, the audience, the actors performing the play, all being one together in the garden, all part of the one team, as it were, which is what it feels like in the audience. It just made that even more pronounced than normal. Absolutely marvellous effect. I mentioned music before, of course. I do talk about that in the book at some length, and it is crucial to many a Shakespeare play, but in this particular year of the Cambridge Shakespeare Festival, it seems to be integral to all eight of them. I don't think I can remember a year when music was so predominant in every play. Obviously, some plays you expect it and are written with songs and music obviously playing a big part. But here we had all kinds of things. We even had a saxophone in the 15th century, somewhat anachronistically, but then Shakespeare has Cleopatra playing billiards, so one can't really complain about this, and it was quite beautiful, actually. Well, very well played indeed by Scott Westby. But all the music was great. You actually knew this before the play even started, because behind this tiring house that you can see into, a good half an hour before the play started, I think, the musicians, the actors being musicians, play a folk song. Folk songs are played all the way through. They're playing this folk song, and you can see some of them, and obviously you can hear all of them. And it's just lovely. And last night it got a round of applause, a spontaneous round of applause, which I hope pleased the people playing the music. But it was certainly very well deserved. So we get all that before we even start. We get the music, we get Malcolm Davis, then we get Tessa giving her prologue, and then we're straight into the play. And I mentioned before that it's a bit of a funny play, Henry V, with its strange ending, which is not the climactic ending you would expect, knowing the story. But the opening, actually, is the funniest thing of all, because you get this prologue telling you to imagine two great nations at war. You've got to visualise the horses with their hoofs in the ground, and by the way, Tessa does that absolutely brilliantly. You've got to imagine all this, you're really built up, and then bang, what you get normally, not in this production, I hasten to add, but what you get normally is the long talk between the bishops and the long, 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 long speech about Salic Law. So it's really, for the people who first went, they must have thought they were about to see a battle, and instead all they get is talk, 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 talk. I spoke to David Rowan about not using the Salic speech when we met at one of the plays in the first half of the season. And I was disappointed to hear there being no Salic speech, but I quite understand it. It's it is deliberately tedious. It has very little bearing to a modern audience, and it just takes so damn long. I do love it, though, because in the middle, near the end of this tortuous explication, the line, well, that's it, it's as clear as is the summer sun, always cracks me up, always cracks everybody up, and it's a great release of tension. It's not here, but we do still have the effect of the big, big build-up from Tessa's prologue and then Bishop's talking, rather than a huge amount of action. Soon we're on to the first big scene when Henry V, rather than a huge amount of action. We're on to the first big scene when Henry V accepts the gift of tennis balls from France. And this was quite excellent. One tiny little thing that I usually look forward to and didn't really get this time is the repetition of the word mock, 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 mock is usually played as though it is a tennis ball. In the middle of a game. I didn't get that quite as much as I normally do, but I'm really, really being picky here because Joseph Tregear, again, apologies if I'm mispronouncing, Joseph Tregear, is King Henry, is really, really excellent. He projects his voice, as you would expect a king to do, he projects his voice just quite marvellously. And there were lots of really fine small touches. For example, Henry taking his cloak off as a greeting to the French messenger, and the way he put it back on again when he assumed his full majesty and formality later was just excellent. There was lots of little touches like that throughout the play. So you've got the idea that the main characters were played well, the more minor characters were played well, that the cast did a brilliant job of doubling and tripling, etc. I'm sure you all know the story of Henry V, so I'm not going to go through the whole thing, just to say that both the comic, and a word for Pistol, Pistol in Llewellyn, which is absolutely magnificent. Scott Westerby, as Pistol, making poor Pistol eat the leek was just marvellous. David Bourne was great as Pistol, but the line when Llewellyn says, "I've got another leek in my pocket," the audience just erupted. It was just marvellous. So what I was going to say there was the comic and the tragic parts are all played absolutely magnificently. And really, I'm not going to go through the whole thing. What I should suggest you do is you go and see it because it's absolutely magnificent. Well done to one and all. And of course, the director, David Rowan, who, as usual, has pulled out a magic trick from his endless hat of magic tricks.